Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, August 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we savor what remains of summer and look ahead to fall. And what's our method of reflection and foreshadowing? Beer, of course. In the studio with their favorite summer and fall beers, we have John Fisher and Hutch Kugeman of the Culinary Institute of America, as well as Sam Pagano of the C.H. Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station. You got a question about suds? You want to know how to brew them or drink them? Give us a call, 800-348-2551. They'll tell you how to brew them. I'll tell you how to drink them. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us your beer question at voxpop@wamc.org. John, Hutch, Sam, a celebrity guest, all coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. While the fall beers have already started appearing in stores, there's still plenty of shelf space and time left this season to enjoy some summer beers. So to experience the best of both seasons, we talk summer and fall beers on the program today with three guests. John Fisher is a professor of hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York. Hutch Kugeman is the head brewer for the brewery at the CIA. He was also the founding brewer at Crossroads Brewing Company in Athens, New York. Sam Pagano is the brewer at C.H. Evans Brewing Company at the Albany Pump Station. He's also worked at Brown's Brewing Company, Mad Jack Brewing Company, and City Steam Brewery. If you have a question about summer or fall beers or brewing in general, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number. You can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. John, Hutch, Sam, welcome to Food Friday.
Thanks for having us.
You know, when I was reading the introduction here, we had great natural sound. Everyone's mic was on, and we heard a lot of beers and ice and stuff. It gets you in the mood for the show. We also have with us today a celebrity beer taster, Joe Donahue. Nice to have you here, sir.
Good to be here. Actually, I thought that sounded – I felt like I was in a Holiday Inn in Newark where you just heard the ice machine in the room next door.
Right. Yeah. You felt right at home, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
There you go. And it's also nice to see the Mets hats here. There are three Mets fans in the room, one Philly fan, one Yankee fan. You know, so three-fifths is all right.
That's good
it's
odds.
Okay.
60%?
Three-fifths.
Let's go Mets, right? All right, beers. That's the topic at hand today. If anybody has a question about beers, 800-348-2551. Where do we begin? Now, we started this as a summer beer show. Late in the game, we also added fall beers. I understand some of you didn't get the memo.
Yeah, I brought all of my summer beers.
Listen, that works as well.
I'm sorry, you planned your show?
I think
the show's planned.
You know me better
wow.
than that.
We've never done that.
Who does it?
I have a producer, much like you have a producer, and you know, I usually find out what the show is the day before.
Got to look into this planning thing.
Well, this is great. It's nice to have all of you guys here. Sam Pagano, what's new over at C.H. Evans?
Oh man, a whole bunch of things. We're actually having our first beer dinner under myself as the head brewer and Ian O'Leary as our head chef coming up in September, where we're working with a bunch of local chefs and some of our favorite breweries and distilleries and bakers from the area. So we're really excited to showcase some of our stuff.
Are these paired, or are you just going to throw some food down and say, drink
well,
up?
If I had it my way, I just want to crush beers.
Put a keg in the middle of the room. Self-serve. Bags of potato chips.
Right. Yeah. Our chef's a little bit more eloquent than that.
That's good.
It's paired up.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Gentlemen from the CIA, Hutch and John, how are things going there at the brewery?
Great. We're just coming back off of our, we call our intercession, our little summer break.
Yeah.
So gearing things back
up.
Is
that what professors call it? The intercession?
Correct. That's the technical term.
Sitting on the couch.
Well, there was the official summer break, and then there's 3 weeks before the bachelor students come back.
Right.
And that technically is the so-called intercession.
Usually the beard growth is a good giveaway
that
you've been on vacation.
Facial hair.
Well, that's great. And you guys are gearing up for another semester over there. And what have we brought today from the CIA brewery?
We bought you a whole variety of things. We brought our Mise en Place Wit, which is a traditional Belgian wheat beer brewed with orange peel and coriander. Mm. That's one of our year-round beers. Brought a brand new Pilsner that I just put on tap yesterday.
Oh, nice.
So nice, light and crisp. Perfect for Labor Day weekend, right?
And what's the alcohol content of that?
That's pretty low. It's about 5%.
Okay. Well, so, still, that's better than your American Pilsner you would get at the store.
Actually, 5 is about right for an American Pils. American Light Pilsners would be like 3.5.
Okay. Yeah. What else did we bring?
We've got our most recent class project beer. So that's the beers the students get to create with me. Of course, it's an IPA because that's what everybody drinks now. It's only hazy IPAs is the only thing you can make anymore. Right. So we got a hazy IPA, a little summer ale. Got some Pilsner from our friends at Crossroads. A couple different beers here.
And Sam, what did you bring today?
A few of our beers that we do in the summer. One is our Capital Light, which is, you know, your 3.8% kind of American Euro lager hybrid.
If you're flying the space shuttle, that's the, the sort of thing that you would
have. Yeah, exactly. Right. That's the one you want behind the shuttle wheel. We have our Evans Vit, so another whip beer, kind of my take on it. It's pretty traditional, maybe a touch sweeter and thicker than... You know, the Belgian style. And then our Skyway Sour, and we rotate the fruit in this beer, and this time it is the peach. And that is what you have in your glass, so you
so,
might
shall
you
try that
up.
One?
Yeah, this is the one?
I already drank mine. So
all right, gentlemen. Oh, prost. Here we go.
There's couldn't make it through the introduction.
Over in that corner. Yeah. Great aroma on it, too. Nice peach nose.
Yeah, nice peach. All the fruit is fermented out in this beer, so it's no post-fermentation fruit.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, really refreshing.
Which makes it less sweet.
Yeah, it can make it less. Yeah, definitely makes it less sweet because you're letting the fruit sugars ferment out.
A little bit of tartness there. It's very
a little
nice
tartness. It's not super acidic. You know,
it's not
gonna,
sour.
Yeah, it's not going to melt the enamel off your teeth, but it gives you that quenching tartness. It's really good.
Is the acid from the peaches or from fermentation?
A little bit of both. So it's a kettle sour. So we use lactobacillus. You actually use Good Belly, which is like a probiotic drink to sour it, and then the peach added some tartness as well.
So it's good for you, too.
You see, like beer is good for you. That's what they always say. I tell you what, John Fisher, since you are the one of the experts, you will tell us what order to drink things today. Okay?
Oh, no,
Yeah, you're the Captain Steubing of this boat, okay?
Does that make us – am I Isaac then?
You what
can,
am I?
You can be the bartender. Sure, sure.
I'm in the boiler room.
Right, and
that
Joe,
makes him formerly Murray.
You can be Gopher, Joe.
Oh, right? Thank you.
Gopher.
Thank
you. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's take a call, and then we'll try another beer here. Oliver in Pittsfield. Oliver, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Love the show. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
I got a question about brewing cider. A couple of questions, actually. One is how come when...
We lost you there, Oliver. Give it another shot.
They typically tend to give me a worse hangover than traditional beers do, and I'm wondering why that might be.
Sugar.
And then second up, I'm thinking about adding hops to one of my batches this year, and I was wondering if the brewmasters over there had any recommendations on hops that would pair well with a cider.
Okay. Who wants first?
Do you get hangovers really bad when you drink wine, too? Because I know a lot of times ciders have more sugar content, but a lot of people have to sulfite their ciders as well, and some people have different reactions to that as well.
How much are you drinking?
Yeah.
Yeah, how strong are we talking?
We should probably start there, yeah.
That's the other thing, is a lot of ciders are stronger than beers.
That's true.
And they kind of hide the alcohol.
Oh, we lost him there.
Huh? Well, to get to your second point, I would look for a hop that was maybe more fruit or aromatic forward, something like Citra or El Dorado. Something that's going to go nice with the kind of sweet, I don't want to say apple-y character, but something that's going to go nice with that sweet tart flavor that ciders have, I would go for maybe a nice aromatic hop.
Is it common practice to hop when you're doing cider?
It's becoming it.
Yeah.
It's not traditional, but hops are popular. And so cider makers
whole,
have put them to good use.
The whole IPA thing, hops are hot, and they're showing up in a lot of things.
I'm so hot right now.
Just like Hansel.
I'm getting a little tired of it. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah,
about hops?
Yeah, well, no, the IPA craze.
I agree.
It's
with
lasted
you,
longer
Ray.
Than.
You're not alone.
That's actually a great segue into the beer I was going to open next. Because
all right, go for it.
What you're seeing is pretty much everyone making lager and making Pilsner.
Yeah.
It's the beer the brewers like to drink because it's got flavor. It can be slightly hoppy, but it's not bitter. It's not heavy and cloying. It's usually lower alcohol, so you can have a couple of them. Make two. Maybe.
Couple.
like two, maybe.
Yeah. But more and more you're seeing these pop up all over the place. pretty much every brewery is making Pilsner now.
Okay.
Yes. Because consumers like it, and the ingredients are out there.
Well, the thing is, IPA is not going to go away. It's been the most popular.
It's still tasty. It's still tasty.
It's like a super germ. It morphed from American IPA into this New England IPA, this hazy thing, that in a way is made more for the American public than any previous style because it's less bitter.
But I do like the hazy IPAs. My only objection is if I'm in a store, not a specialty beer store, but if I'm in the grocery store or whatever looking for beer, there are 40 different IPAs.
But I'll up you that. There are breweries in this market, if you walk into, all you can get on tap is an IPA.
Yeah.
And there's not much variety. And I understand, I get it, but you like variety too.
Are they easier to brew?
Easy
is kind of a misnomer. I mean, anything with big flavors does cover up small flaws.
That's why a beer like this is so hard.
But it would be dismissive to say that they're brewing them because they're easier. I don't think that's not the case. I mean, most of these guys are. Yeah. I mean, and having a beer in a can that's just on a shelf at your local beverage store and still tastes great in 3 weeks is not an easy thing to do. So they're just as technically hard as anything else. Yeah.
All right, let's try this. This is a Pilsner, and this is from the brewery at the CIA. Here we go.
And what's it called? Is how clear it is.
This is called PRB Pilsner, which is named after one of our restaurants, the Post Road Brewhouse.
Okay.
This is made with about 30% New York-grown corn, as well as about another 20% New York-grown grains.
Very refreshing.
So that's also one of the reasons why we're brewing Pilsners, is that more and more New York breweries are using New York ingredients. And so why not feature the ingredients that grow well here?
Yeah.
And the kinds of grains we grow well here tend lend themselves really well to these kinds of beers.
Let's take a break. We'll talk about Pilsners in a moment. It's the Beer Show on a Food Friday. We have John Fisher, Hutch Kugeman, Sam Pagano, Radio's Joe Donahue here. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be back. You know, it's going to be an eventful show when all the brewers are singing the Rheingold drinking song here, and it's only 20 minutes after 2 o'clock.
Only the ones who knew the words still.
Well, unfortunately, John, you and I both knew the word. The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question for John, Hutch, or Sam, or if you would like to say hello to Radio's Joe Donahue. It's the Beer Show here on a Food Friday. We just tried this Pilsner, and we'll get to the phones in a second here. Really delicious.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, when did American tastes shift to this? This happened, I thought, in the 1900s, but...
Yeah, I'd say before that. I mean, really, it's European immigrants, right, spreading across the United States, and that was the kind of beer they were bringing back from, we'll say Germany, but Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Then you get, so you have all the little regional breweries, like Rheingold we were just talking about, and then when you have the advent of commercial refrigeration and train transportation, all of a sudden the companies all spread. And we all kind of know what happened over the course of 100 years, which companies kind of won out post-prohibition and moving forward.
Are there any good mass, and we won't say names here of companies, I don't want to get sued. Are there any good mass-produced beers that you guys would drink, say, after you mow a lawn or whatever?
Sure.
Yeah. Tons
I
of
do.
Them.
Yeah.
Hey, look, when you're at a barbecue and someone's got that big bucket of ice and you reach your arm in there and get that one from the bottom, so it's so cold it burns your arm, and you pull that out and it's ice cold.
Which one do you like? You can say if you like it.
Probably PBR. Although, lately, Narragansett. I've been drinking a lot of Narragansett.
Yep.
Like Joe's
Narragansett.
Nodding.
I
really enjoy that beer.
And highly affordable.
Yeah. And it's got that nice little kind of corn sweetness to it, so it's light and crisp, but it's not totally bland.
This email came in from Daniel. Hello, I'm trying to brew a New England IPA and was wondering what water profile you use to do so. I recently was at the pump station, enjoyed one of your New England IPAs. I brewed several New England IPAs at home, but seemed to not be able to get the correct soft mouthfeel. I think I'm missing something with the water profile, but perhaps it's something else. Please let me know your thoughts. That's from Dan.
Can I ask for a definition before you answer this question
water
of
profile?
A New England? No, thank you. of a New England IPA.
Yeah.
Because I love it. I love the style, but I don't know exactly what
so
it is.
So a New England IPA is going to be characterized by, one, its appearance. It's going to be very hazy.
Yeah.
Two, it's going to have a huge hop character, but it's going to have minimal bitterness. So you're really focusing on the flavor and the aromatics that the hops can bring and less on their bittering potential.
And the fruity aromatics.
And the fruity aromatics. And that's why it's a huge segue nowadays. you know, I was saying earlier today to the staff, you know, when I talk to older people that have been around for craft beer, and they always say, oh, I don't like IPAs, are too bitter. And I'm like, well, this is different.
Interesting.
Because it's not bitter, and it turns a lot of people on. A lot of times they taste like juice, and I think that's another reason why they're so popular.
Well, right.
They taste like beer.
I was going to say, it's a rarity to find one that doesn't taste like grapefruit juice.
Yeah,
well,
pretty much.
A brewer friend of ours, Amit Ram, says, how can you not like mimosas? Mimosas are delicious.
Speaking of that, what is this, John?
Oh, so this is a...
not a mimosa.
No.
Not a mimosa.
No.
It's a cocktail made with Brooklyn Bel Air Sour.
Ah.
And it's a Bel Air spritz made with Aperol.
All right.
I know that you like Aperol spritz.
I love Aperol. Yeah,
so
thanks to you.
I did this for you.
Mm.
Well, actually, I didn't. They did. It's their marketing cocktail that they're using to sell it, and it is just selling the bejeepers out of it.
That's very crass, very tasty.
A marketing cocktail.
Well, that's what a bunch of them are. That's what the Moscow Mule was born of marketing, so.
This is good. This is good, though. So you have the sour beer, Aperol. How much Aperol is in there?
I'd say a good splash. I was maybe an ounce.
How scientific of you.
Yes, that's very, very easy to measure.
And
glad to help.
A little orange in there. It's beautiful. Very tasty.
And
sour beer gives you a little balance to that kind of herbal Aperol and then the...
All right, before we get to Dorian Schenectady, one more question following up on the IPA. Now, I prefer a pale ale.
Right.
What specifically is the difference? Less, I mean, to me, they taste heavier. There's more weight to them.
They may taste heavier. They're generally going to... Alcohol doesn't really matter. I mean, my pale and the New England IPA the gentleman was asking about are about the same ABV. Pales are generally going to have a little bit more bittering potential.
Really?
Generally a little bit more bitterness, and you're also going to get a little bit more malt character.
Yeah,
you know,
oftentimes
I think
malt.
That's what I like,
speaking.
Having a little
bit. It's a little bit more on the balance side.
Yeah.
To answer the emailer's question about water profiles,
right.
It really depends on what his water's like to begin with, but
right.
for the most part, I would say go heavy on calcium chloride, which is going to give you a more rounded mouthfeel. Which is one of the water salts that brewers
often
add.
So you're suggesting to add?
Yeah.
Yes. Calcium chloride, probably a fair amount.
Calcium chloride, and I use like probably almost 35%+ wheat and flaked oats in a combination.
Yes, absolutely. Well, flaked oats and wheat are good choices.
High percentage, almost probably upwards of 50 now, to be honest, if I went back and looked.
All those things are going to give you more mouthfeel and more fullness.
Lactose, too.
Lactose sugar you can use, and they call them milkshake IPAs. They get to be those then taste a lot more like melted ice cream or melted
like
popsicles.
Wouldn't all of this run afoul of German laws?
We have broken all the German laws at this point.
Poison it.
Extensively.
Which is why the brewers all like to drink Pilsner.
There you go.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, and Dory in Schenectady has been waiting a while. Dory, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This question is a general question for everybody there. What would you suggest for someone who has never had beer as a starter?
Now.
Because if you go in and look around, it is freaking overwhelming.
I agree with you.
What kind of beer do you like? Or I'm sorry, what kind of drinks do you like that are not beer?
Well, my palate is a French palate. I cook French food. I eat French food. If I'm going to have alcohol, it's most likely going to be a white wine.
So light sour.
Or a Saison.
Yeah, something like that.
Belgian-style Saison. Look for a beer called DuPont. Hmm. It's a really classic Belgian farmhouse producer. It's going to have a lot of very dry finish, usually heavily carbonated. A lot of kind of fruity, spicy characters that might remind you a little bit of champagne.
Yes, I love fruit.
Yeah, so it's not going to be sweet fruit, but it's going to have a fruity character that reminds you of like a dry white wine or champagne.
Pilsner would work too, right?
Pilsner is very light and approachable, but it depends on whether you like bitterness or not. Because sometimes with a drier, even the lighter, drier beers.
No, you don't?
Then
not really.
And surprisingly, listen to this show, so I'm amazed.
Usually
it's interesting, though. My father was a chef, but we were mostly wine. And someone at 22, which was, I don't know, like 107 years ago now, gave me a sip of Budweiser, and I didn't like it.
Yeah,
and have never
I.
touched beer since.
Yeah, I would try Belgian beers, and I would look for lighter Belgian beers, because they do tend to be fruitier and not very bitter.
But I would say also, give a shot, try this, because it's available all over the place, this Brooklyn brewery, Bel Air Sour, because it has the similar level of tartness to a glass of white wine.
Ideally, though, I mean, you don't want your wine to taste just like your beer and your beer to taste just like your wine, right?
Well, it's a gateway. You need to open the door.
It's a gateway beer. I see. I got
you. For a wine drinker.
All right, Dory, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. John Fisher and Hutch Kugeman of the CIA here, and also Sam Pagano of C.H. Evans Brewing Company, and the Roundtable's Joe Donahue. If you have a question, 800-348-2551, the number. Let's go to Jack in Glenville. Jack.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I just was listening to your comments about IPA, and that's what they said what my interest is that my kids love IPA.
Hey, Jack, before you get going, and I think we're on the same page here, can you turn that radio down just a little bit? Because we're kind of hearing
my radio?
Yeah. We're hearing it in the background.
Well,
either that or someone who sounds very much like me is in your house.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
I have that problem, too.
Stand by. All right. Yeah, there we go.
Good to hear you again.
Yeah, it's the wheel of life.
Excellent.
That's great. Oh, there we are, Jack.
Sorry.
That's okay, man.
I know the rules. Honest.
All right, you're on. Go ahead, my friend.
Okay.
So IPAs.
I have tried the IPA for instance. I've got like 8 bottles of Saranac Legacy.
Yeah.
That I got when my kids were here the last time, and I said, "Well, you know, I could take that sometimes." So I had a bottle of it, and it's just too bitter and dry, I guess. So you know what I ended up doing? I tried to change it a little bit by adding some ginger ale.
Ah, okay.
Shandy.
Yeah.
And that didn't work.
No. I'm not surprised.
Now I hear you're talking about
it might be
about
time to give
IPAs
up.
IPAs with all sorts of fruit, and you mentioned Brooklyn.
Brooklyn's makes some. I don't know. Does Brooklyn makes probably some in that category? But I mean, there's lots of different subcategories of IPA, and Saranac's great brewery. Legacy's, I think, a delicious beer, but you know, taste is subjective.
I love their pale ale.
But it's not really the New England style IPA. You're gonna look for. If you want to try IPAs that are more fruity, like we're talking about, you want to specifically look for something labeled New England style, because Legacy
yeah,
is still kind of classic.
Heard about it. I didn't realize that we had our own style. Yeah, even though we're upstate New York, we really have ties to New England.
Well, it started in Vermont, so that's pretty close.
There you are.
yes. Yeah. Yeah. What?
You said you're from Glenville?
I'm in Glenville.
You know, there's lots of great breweries in Schenectady that have some different New England.
Right down on Freeman's Bridge Road.
Yeah, okay. There's good breweries in Schenectady. If you come around Albany, we at Pump Station have some New England IPAs. If you go to the store, Sloop is a very popular company that makes New England's. Yeah,
there you are.
Juice Bum.
You'll hear that name all the time. So look those out.
Name?
Look those up, but just make sure when you're shopping, you're looking for New England specifically.
Sometimes called hazy IPA.
Or hazy IPA, yeah, something like that.
All right, our number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question about beers and brewing. And what is this somebody handed me as we...
That's just the beer that I made the cocktail with, so you could taste it on its own.
Okay.
Yes, that's the Brooklyn Bel Air Sour.
Bel Air Sour from Brooklyn.
a great sour beer, widely available, light and dry, tart, not fruited. But a really refreshing, delicious sour beer.
You know, I find this sour beer to be more palatable than some of the sour beers that I've had that I really don't like very much.
Well,
this
sour,
one I like.
You know, there are different levels of sour.
Yeah,
right.
They're not all created equal, and some of them can be very acidic.
Yeah.
And if you're prone to heartburn, over the top acidic. But that is a really particularly nice balance, as was Sam's peach sour that we had.
Yeah,
first.
It was about the same level.
Really nice.
Of sourness.
Yeah, nicely balanced.
Yeah.
But also there are different kinds of sour. You know, if it's lactic acid or acetic acid or, you know, acetic acid is the acid in vinegar. And if you have something like a Rodenbach Grand Cru from Belgium.
I'm sorry, say Rodenbach
is the brewery.
Okay.
And it is called a Flemish Red, and it's oak-aged. And it tastes like a beer with sherry vinegar added to it.
Mm.
And they can be delicious too, but sometimes you lose a little drinkability there. It's a sort of thing where, yes, I will sip on this and enjoy it, but... You're not going to have 2 pints.
Well, it's like our caller with the French wines. French wines don't taste good by themselves. They taste great with food. So a lot of the sour beers really are meant for food because the acid cuts the,
all right, let's,
the fat.
Before we try our next beer, let's talk about that for a minute. The number is 800-348-2551. If you're on the line, we'll get to you in a moment. 800-348-2551. Pairing foods. Now, we've been talking a lot about IPAs because that's what's hot and has been for several years now. For me... It goes great with a pepperoni pizza. Is that wrong?
No.
Nothing's wrong if you like the way it tastes.
That's right.
Right. You're right, Ray.
I just ate a pizza last night with some beer.
Yeah?
No.
Eight slices.
eight slices, San Pagano. Well done. All right,
But IPA is like the cheeseburger beer.
Oh, really?
Because the
Why?
Combination of the bitterness and the slightly higher alcohol. Higher alcohol gives it more body for the fat in the burger, and the bitterness helps to counteract the richness. So acid cuts through fat, but bitterness kind of balances
that
it
off.
That
is so interesting. Now, I grilled last night, and I should have had, and I made a beautiful filet mignon. Beautiful. Absolutely perfect. I could have had an IPA.
Cooked perfectly,
You could have,
sure.
But you don't ever want to overwhelm it, right? So you
No, so instead I had an old-fashioned, which was not necessarily
also,
the best
plan. IPA is great with...
That's called the Mad Men pairing.
Great with spicy food, too. IPA is great with tacos, Thai, Vietnamese, Thai anything awesome. That's got a lot of spice to it, really good with IPA.
Now, when you guys say a fruity IPA, infused fruit or just the hops taste fruity?
Nowadays it can be both. I mean, I think mostly when we're talking about New England IPAs, we're referring to... the hops, but there is a lot of fruit in IPAs now, too.
You know, one of my favorite IPAs, and I haven't had it in a few years now, is Titan IPA. I think they're out of Colorado.
That's Great Divide, I think.
Divide. Yeah. It's very pine. It's got a pine sort of, and I'm not sure which hops they are using.
So that's more of like the West Coast style IPA.
It's very hoppy.
It's
not very delicious.
It's not particularly hazy. It's got a little bit malt character to it, which you liked with the pale ale, so that makes sense.
That's one of my faves. Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551, and... I'm sorry, I don't know how to read your name, but who is calling, please?
This is Steve from Springfield.
Oh, hi, Steve from Springfield. There's some German words there that I'm not familiar with, so go ahead.
Did Einheitsgeboten, perhaps? Hey, I got a question. There was a great brewer, Greg Noonan, who is up in Burlington at Vermont Pub and Brewery, who used to make a Christmas beer with hemlock or pine in it. And I was just curious if you're familiar with a recipe like that, and how do you end up adding that into the brewing process?
Hemlock.
Yeah, so not to be confused with hemlock plant, which is poisonous.
Yeah, that's not a really good plant.
Hemlock the evergreen is totally fine. I've had it done both ways. I've had it done in the boil, so on the hot side, which will help break down some of the oils that would be in the pine
maybe
or hemlock. But I've also had them where the beer was aged on top of the evergreen. You can get good results both ways.
I generally err towards hot side with some things like that because you never know like what's on that
plant.
You
mean in the brewing process?
Yeah, it all depends on what you're looking for. If you add something you pick from your tree in the backyard and throw it in your fermenter,
right.
There could be microbes and yeast and all kinds of things on it, whereas if you put it in your boil, you're going to ideally kill off some of that stuff.
And when he talks about doing it in the hot side, in brewing, there's the hot side and the cold side. Hot side is mashing in and creating the wort, and at some point it's boiled, and that's usually where the hops are added. Then it's cooled down and put into the fermenters. Fermenter is considered cold side.
Yeah.
Different flavor profiles when you're doing it that way?
As far as
adding either hot or cold?
It can be.
It's like a McDLT
in many ways. You can extract more bitterness from things when you boil them.
Yeah.
But like as Sam said, it can be safer microbiologically.
Yeah.
I think with any ingredient, especially one that's got a strong bitter flavor like hemlock or pine or spruce, you got to balance it with other stuff. Mm-hmm. So you want to have maybe chocolatey roasted malts to balance it out. Or you want to use it in an IPA where it's going to play nicely with the hop aromas. You really want to make sure that you're... It's almost like making a batch of chili. And sure, you can throw all the hot peppers in there you want, but at some point it's just too hot and you got to balance those flavors out with other stuff. So
also
you need the cinnamon or the chocolate or whatever else.
Also thinking about brewing as cooking, which it really is, when you're making a dish with various dried herbs and fresh herbs, you don't put fresh basil in at the beginning when you're making a two-hour stew.
You don't?
You put it at the very end.
Oh, okay.
But if you're using dried rosemary, you can't add that at the very end because it's like chewing on pine needles. You have some ingredients need to be cooked with hot liquid to get their flavors out, and some those flavors will dissipate if they get too much heat for too much time. So,
John Fisher is here, and Hutch Kugeman from the brewery at the CIA, Sam Pagano of C.H. Evans Brewing Company, and Joe Donahue from WAMC's Roundtable. The number here, 800-348-2551. It's the Food Friday Beer Edition. We'll be back with more calls in a moment. Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551. The beer show in full swing here. Nobody was singing the Rheingold song during the break, so everybody's mellowed out now. Sam Pagano of C.H. Evans Brewing is here. Hutch and John from the brewery at the Culinary Institute here as well. We'll jump back to the phones in a moment. We tried a beer in the break here, and this is, Sam, this is your wit, right?
Yeah, so this is called Evans Wit, short for wit beer, wit beer, which is Dutch for just white beer.
Right.
Which means there's a lot of wheat malts, and also they're traditionally spiced with orange peel and ground coriander and again, a specialty yeast, a Belgian ale yeast that throws that kind of like intense fruity esters and stuff.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
A great beer to have with crab or shrimp. Like something's got that little bit of sweetness to it. People always laugh when I say this, but great beer with brunch.
I can see that.
Eggs, salads, lighter dishes, great with wit beer.
Notice Joe's not laughing.
No, I'm all for a brunch beer.
Let's go get brunch. Yeah.
It's a great roast chicken beer, too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Let's brunch. Pound through about three or four emails here, and then we'll jump back on the phones here for the home stretch. This one's from Martina in Menands. Hi, everybody. I have celiac disease, so I have to avoid beer. I've tried a few gluten-free beers, but I've never found one that tastes as good as regular beer. Is it a lot harder to make good gluten-free beer? Among the ones on the market, do you have any favorites? And that's from Martina.
Yes, it is harder to make a good gluten-free beer because gluten comes from things like barley and wheat, which are pretty integral to the brewing process.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to replace major ingredients in the beer, you're going to get a different flavor profile. So you're not going to get the same body and flavor and alcohol content that you would. You have to use alternative grains or other sugar sources, and they just don't give you the same flavors.
Okay. This one is from Anne, and Anne says, you just finished harvesting my hops. My fingers are sticking to the keys as I type. The varieties are Centennial and Columbus. What type of homebrew would you recommend for these? And that's from Anne.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm the biggest sucker for wet hop beers. They're my favorite beer on the planet. Really, you can do anything, but I always recommend a pale. Go light on the malt so you can really let them fresh hop shine.
All right. This one is
use them now, too.
It's from Jamie. I have fallen in love with this beer, Sierra Nevada Extra Dry Brewed IPA, light and crisp with a kick. What should I use? And you gotta proofread these. What should I use and do? Oh, what should I use and do to brew my own Brut IPA?
So those beers are made by making all of the starch in the malt fermentable. So you make everything into sugar so that the yeast can eat it all and leave the beer very dry.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to add some artificial enzymes to do that. You won't be able to accomplish that without adding extra alpha and beta amylase. Alpha glucosidase is an enzyme you might be able to find at a homebrew store. But basically, you want to make all the sugar in the grain fermentable so that the yeast will eat it all and leave the beer bone dry.
Brut, like it just means dry, right?
Very dry.
Okay.
And don't reuse that yeast.
No,
unless you want to make another brut.
All right, this one's from Bob, and then we'll jump back on the phones. Question about brewmaster's favorites. One of the CIA brewmasters commented that the student beers were IPAs because that's what everybody seems to be drinking. I've always heard that IPAs are generally on brewmasters' personal favorite lists. So my question is, what are your guests' personal favorite beers? We'll start with Sam.
Every year when it comes out, I buy a 12-pack of Sierra Nevada Celebration, and I sit down and I drink the entire thing by myself.
Yep. I'm with you on that one.
Thank you for sharing.
It's very old school kind of IPA. It's just delicious. Sometimes with a pizza.
I'm sorry, but is that like an issue with the holidays or everything at home?
It's the nostalgia. You know?
Around Christmas, I got a 12-pack and drink it by myself.
Yeah. But he does
everything's fine, though.
But he does it in front of a very bright light.
That is
true.
What do you think, John Fisher?
If I had to choose like a desert island beer, it would probably be Saison, what we were talking about before. It's just such a it's a perfect style. Mm. You know, the balance and the drinkability by itself with food. I love IPAs too, and I like New England IPAs, but I like beer.
You like beer.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe Donahue? You're not a brewer, but you know a few things about beer.
Honorary brewer.
So I have my favorites of, I love a red ale. I do like red ale. Sometimes they're too hoppy. I don't know how you all feel about that.
Everything is hoppy now. Okay, it's obviously hard to sell malty beer if it's not
really
a strong beer.
So a less hoppy red ale is I love.
And there's some good ones out there.
There are some very good ones out there.
Yeah.
I would say if I see it on tap, I kind of can't resist Anchor Steam.
Oh,
that's
a good beer.
Kind of a hybrid of an ale and a lager. It's hard to find on tap. It's hard to find it fresh.
Yeah.
But when you do, it is
good stuff. Yeah.
That is true.
Well, it's like when I was at the Sierra Nevada Brewery in Asheville over our break. And to drink a Sierra Nevada pale ale at that intercession, to drink it at the source, that beer is just perfect.
I like a good, I like a very good Bock beer. And I was amazed. And I don't get out much. So several years ago, I was down at the.
That's because they keep you in.
At Wolf's Beer Garden. This is maybe 10 years ago now. And I had they had Einbecker Urbach on tap. And that is one of my all-time favorites.
Beer.
Just a
great beer.
Meaty, delicious beer. All right, back to the phones we go. And Joe in Albany. Joe.
Hey, everybody. How are you guys?
Good. We have beer.
So this is a question for Sam.
Whoa.
And since you were a brewer here in the capital region, and you were at the pump station, and then you went over to Mad Jack, and then you went to Connecticut and brewed some fantastic beer before coming back, is there any sort of a flavor profile difference between the hops grown in New York State and Connecticut, and also what sort of character differences also exist?
Sam, you have a stalker.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, Joe. Thank you.
A little bit, right?
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me to say if there's a massive difference between New York State-grown hops and Connecticut-grown hops, but I will say I do think there's a huge difference between those two states' hops versus what you're getting out of the Pacific Northwest, which is what I tend to use quite a bit of. You know, there's a lot of proprietary blends, or not blends, hops that you can't grow in those states. So, you know, like your Citras and your Mosaics are licensed, so you can't just plant those in Hartford, Connecticut, and then start brewing beer with them. So
how do they find out?
I don't know.
You can't get the roots.
You can't buy them.
Yeah, you got to be able to get the little rhizomes and the roots.
But I would say that sometimes the difference is, so hops have terroir just like grapes do.
Yeah.
The plants, particularly the weather patterns, make a big difference in how the hops mature and the flavors you get out of them. Sometimes that's to a benefit. I mean, some of the hops that we're growing here in New York State, from varieties I've had from their traditional regions, usually the West Coast, that I don't particularly like them on the West Coast, the West Coast version, but the New York ones are having these great characters. Our industry is still pretty far behind the West Coast. It's going to be another 20 years before we catch up, and it's going to take another 20 years before we find out which hops come from New York that have good, unique characters.
Yeah.
So we need that kind of the time to kind of keep growing these and seeing what they turn into.
I think Centennial is really good coming out of New York State.
Mm-hmm.
Some really interesting, that Michigan Copper hop, which is
Copper
a Michigan
is really good,
created hop but grown in New York State. Yeah. Really interesting fruit characters to it.
That's a nice hop.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. John Fisher and Hutch Kugeman of the brewery at the CIA, Sam Pagano of C.H. Evans Brewing Company, Joe Donahue from WAMC here as well, Michael in Walden. Michael, you're on.
Hey there, fellas. How y'all doing?
Oh,
great.
We're doing it,
what's up?
All right, so I got a question about you touched upon it earlier about consistency in beer. I've been drinking a beer for a while now. I don't know if I can say the name on the air.
Oh, go ahead.
It's a Magic Hat Number 9.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it's not quite pale ale. Delicious. Love it. But been drinking it forever. But the problem is depending on where I get it, it will have a distinctly different flavor. Is that a common thing with mass-produced beers like that?
Shouldn't be.
Stale, not stale.
My guess is about freshness. Yeah. I would be checking the dates on where you're buying that.
And if it's sitting in the light at the shop you buy it from and things like that, if it's stored warm or if it's in the cooler, I always recommend going to the cooler beers and checking their dates, finding out whatever the freshest.
And if the floor is really dusty in the bar, it's probably some stale beer there.
Okay.
So definitely checking in the coolers, avoiding the beers that are left out in the warmth there.
That's a good thing. But I mean, chances are the beer in the cooler was warm before, but almost every bottle or can is date coded in some way. In fact, I have an app on my phone just for deciphering date codes for some breweries that don't use a traditional month, day, year thing.
Yeah.
You really wouldn't be looking for a beer that is less than 3 months old. And
why?
Because that's about when oxidation takes over and the beer starts to stale.
In bottled beer?
Yeah. I mean, 6 months for some of the big breweries
that
are doing.
Beer?
I'm sorry?
What about canned beer?
Same thing. The bigger the brewery is, the longer their beer is probably shelf stable, but the more they're probably filtering some of the flavors out of it. Maybe 6 months on those, but for most breweries, I'd say 3 months. And for hoppy beers, I'd say a month.
Yeah, they turn fast.
Hops fade really quickly. Yeah.
You know, we had a company yesterday, and I gave one of our guests about a year-old German beer that I had in a can.
One thing she I would say it. That is an exception is strong beers.
Yeah.
If you're over about 8% alcohol, the oxygen in there, which a German Bock or Doppelbock might be,
yeah.
The oxygen then gives you interesting developed flavors, much like sherry or port wine. So you're going to get some interesting flavors develop with strong beers.
So it'll actually mature in a way.
It'll mature, yeah. And at some point it peaks, and you won't know when that is until you passed it.
But it still doesn't age as well.
You have to keep trying it again and again until you find out when it was best.
Much like my career.
So buy a case.
Who made the IPA?
This is our most recent class project beer. So this was created by our students. This is a hazy New England IPA. That's what we've been talking about. Very aromatic.
It's tasty.
Fruit forward. This
good
is
body.
Called Professor Haze, named by the students.
All right.
Well, hops.
This is Eldorado and Mosaic and Citra.
Wow. That's good.
It is good.
It is good.
All right, back to the phones
Joe,
we go.
You sound surprised.
No,
oh, man, is this Kingston?
Well, he's had my beer before.
Let's go to Tommy in Kingston. Hello, Tommy. You're on.
Ringer.
Oh, no. Apparently they know you.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Tommy.
Tommy.
I have a question. Guys, I think I know most of you cats. my question, we've been talking about IPAs, and, of course, I love them, but from a CIA or culinary point of view, I'm curious, what do you guys think is the next big wave when the IPA is not the new shiny toy? People have been talking about the end of it, and it seems to be no end to the innovation of IPAs, but I'm trying to figure out what's the next beer. Do you guys have any you guys talk about that?
Well, I'm not sure if it's the new shiny toy. I'm not sure if IPA is the new shiny toy. It's more like Woody from Toy Story. It's been around for a while. But I think that
it's just not going away.
I think that
and I love drinking them. I mean, when you guys started talking about Celebration Ale, man, I used to drink Celebration Ale back, 20 years ago.
Yeah, that and Bigfoot.
And I still do.
I mean, I think you're seeing a lot more craft lager.
Oh man, Bigfoot. That's
Bigfoot. Now that's a barley wine.
Barley wine. Yeah.
That's
that'd be right up your alley.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's evil
but
stuff.
That's back
yeah.
In the, yeah. Right.
I think what beginning. You're seeing, Tommy, and you've already seen this, I'm sure. It's lagers. I mean, people are going back to lager, especially lighter lagers. I think we'll probably see some of the malty ones come out, but it's light and crisp and drinkable. It's stuff that people can buy in large quantities and consume responsibly that you can have three or four of and not get hammered.
But I think we also it's what we as beer professionals want to drink, and I think it's truly what the American public wants to drink. But a lot of people think they should drink IPA because it will make them look like they know what they're doing.
Right,
like they're cool. Huh?
It doesn't work.
Trust me, none of these guys look particularly cool. I've been trying for 17 years.
Well, don't ask us how to be cool. Yeah. Don't ask
I'm not
any of
cooler
us.
Than I was.
Thank you for the call, Tommy. 800-348-2551 is the number. More malt. We need more malt.
I do hope we get a return to
flavor.
Some malty beers. Yeah, I mean, I hope that porters and stouts and brown ales come back. I mean, there's certain, obviously, C.H. Evans has a flagship brown ale. I was having some at dinner in Rhinebeck the other night. It was delicious. Because what we're doing is we're pigeonholing our flavor. I mean, beer's always had a really broad flavor profile. That's one of the things beer had up on wine. We could cover more bases. But by going to just IPAs and light lagers and sour beers, we're pigeonholing our flavor profiles into just a few things.
Back in the day, I remember having just fantastic smoked Reichelbrau beer.
Sure.
Like, oh, so good. Does anybody brew that nowadays?
Just the Germans.
Germany.
I love Rauch beer. I really want
to
brew one.
It's
but
incredibly
I also,
hard to sell.
I don't want to look at it this time next year.
Yeah, you know? It's incredibly hard to sell.
And I don't want my line to smell.
What's the smallest amount you could brew?
Well, we're a 10-barrel. I mean, we could, in theory, probably get away with doing half a batch of that.
Why don't you brew a half a batch? Give me a call.
All right. Well, now I'm doing. Hey, Neil, I'm brewing a Rauch beer.
you might still see them in brew pubs.
Yeah.
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah. Number here is 800-348-2551. Let's quick over to Del Mar and Peter. You're on.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, okay. I'm having trouble hearing you on my phone. I'm just going to ask the question, and then I'll get off, and I'll listen to the answer on the radio.
10-4.
So I'm wondering if anybody there has ever brewed beer with this ground ivy that grows all around here. I've read it before somewhere, and it's also called Jill or Gill on the ground. It has little tiny purple flowers, and if you pick it and crush it, you actually get a very aromatic, hoppy-like smell from it, and it's in the mint family. So has anyone ever heard it or done it, used it before? Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks a lot,
I mean,
Peter.
I've heard it. I see it grow on buildings, but I've never even...
No, I've never heard of anyone using that. There are certain ingredients that we're not allowed to use federally. They have to be approved.
No, why?
Our, because who knows if that's poisonous or
right.
not.
Yeah,
or
they're growing on buildings.
Now, having said that, traditionally, before hops were king, you know, when beer was in its, I wouldn't say infancy, but hundreds of years ago, before hops were widely used, things like mugwort and nettles and things that would be bitter growing herbs were used for bitterness.
Bladderwort.
So it would be traditional that some of those things probably were used in brewing, but I never have. I don't know anyone who does.
And if I have Newt and the like.
You don't want to recommend something that you don't know if it's poisonous or not. So be careful, Peter.
Before hops were used, there was this substance called gruit, G-R-U-I-T, that was made by monks and sold to brewers. And it was had the herbal properties that had preservational properties as well as bitterness that balanced the malt.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are making them again.
The only one I know making a gruit is the Beer Diviner.
Yeah. That's literally the only
person. Beer Diviner, he does sell beer in the capital region. Yep. He does make a gruit if you're interested in trying that. It's very interesting.
It is interesting. It's really, well, that whole place is interesting.
If you like herbal things, if you like Aperol, if you like herbal liqueurs, you probably will like gruit.
That's true.
Yeah. But it's not going to taste like beers you're used to.
Let's quickly jump over to Fred in Gilderland. Fred, you're on. You only have about 30 seconds.
Hi, I was recently in Netherlands and Belgium, and whenever you go to a restaurant or a bar and you ask for a particular beer, they bring you the glass made for that beer. Is that something for real or just marketing hype?
Great question.
It's all good.
John
Fisher.
It's a
combination. It's a combination because the glasses are intended, the shape is intended to make that beer taste at its best, but it is also marketing. And if you go to a great Belgian bar, every brand that has its own glass should be served in that glass. My favorite is the Orval glass.
Oh, yeah.
That's the coolest looking one because it was designed by the architect who designed the brewery.
That's like you're going through communion at church. I love that glass.
But again, that's sort of hype, though, right?
To a certain degree. But, you know, like if you have Kolsch served traditionally, it's in a 200 centiliter milliliter glass that you drink them. And they stay cold because they're such small servings.
Right. And you should get them in a rack. You get like six of them at a time.
We just bought them at the pump station.
Did you know?
For rapid fire drinking.
Oh, by the way, how do people find out more about the pump station?
You can follow us on social media, Instagram and Facebook. You can also just come on down. We're downtown Albany, 20 years, right off the Clinton Avenue exit.
And the brewery at the CIA?
You can go to our website, ciabrewery.com. We've got a great beer festival coming up in October called Brew You.
Brew You!
Early bird tickets going on through the end of this month.
All right, terrific.
Food, beer, educational seminars, a lot of fun time.
And how do people find out more about the Roundtable?
WMC.org/roundtable.
Well played. Support comes from Field Goods, fresh produce, eggs, meat, dairy, small batch creations, and more from local farms and food entrepreneurs delivered to workplace and community locations, field-goods.com. The Barn at Egremont Village Inn, presenting on Friday night, Sean Rao, with opener Izzy Heltai on Saturday night, August 24th, Picky Bastards, theegremontbarn.com. Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York, cafecapriccio.com. And MPAC, announcing the fall 2019 season, that is, featuring a diverse lineup of concerts, films, dance performances, talks, and work-in-progress previews of new productions in development, mpac.rpi.edu. Thanks again to John Fisher, Hutch Kugelman, and Sam Pagano for being here, and to Joe Donahue. Thanks to our engineer, Rob Chacon. Barb King took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely, safe weekend, and we'll be back on Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday.